Welcome to this week's episode of Fat, Drunk, and Stupid. I'm Rob with you as always here with my good friend, Mr. Barley, the steward of the toilets of Gondor here at the sprawling Branch Barlidian compound, the dank must, the moistness. It is very moist. It's rainy.
It is.
And the, cold.
The dank must flow.
The dank will flow, but we're nestled in the bosom of the Branch Barlidian, and we got lots to discuss this evening. We went to the movies a couple weeks ago.
Yes, we did.
We saw The Batman.
Yes.
So I'm sure everybody's anticipating our detailed dissection of that.
We're going to go scene by scene. It's going to be a 4-hour podcast.
We will. I have the script, and we're going to review it, and we're going to act it out. Then we have all kinds of things that went on since we last convened.
Yep.
First of all, what have you been up to since then? What have you been watching? What video game have you been playing?
Well, I did not get around to Guardians of the Galaxy. It is on my list, but I've actually not played any video games apart from one since we met last.
Hades?
Yeah, I just decided I was done.
Look at you.
I nuked the game file. I deleted my save state, so.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah.
No turning back?
No turning back.
Did you know they have over 1,000 hours of voiceover work there?
Yeah, it's your talk about that, but, you know, listening to a 40-year-old guy talk about video games is pretty boring.
Thrilling. instant panty moisturizer right there.
But yeah, it is amazing, 1,000 hours, yeah.
I tried Hades, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Not for me, I don't think.
Yeah, that's okay.
Here's the thing. So I get into the game. I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. And here's what I do like about it. I like that it's like a smaller studio, I think.
Yeah.
And these games get like a pretty good following where, you know, people support them and stuff like that. That style of game is not really for me, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Number one, I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah. Well, you don't. You don't know what the game is until you've put like...
That's part of the journey. This is
you got to put 30 hours in
Look,
before
man,
you really are
starting to Once you hit 2,000 hours, the story really comes together. Yeah, no fucking thanks. That's like people want to get you to watch a show, and they're like, look, the first 5 seasons, not very good, but season 6, it really picks up. I'm like, no.
No, okay, here's the deal. Okay, you got to watch this whole WCW NWO thing, but you got to start in 1992 WCW, like pre-Flair, going back to WF Flair. Yeah.
Yes.
After 5 years, you can finally get current.
Well, I have been playing the Guardians of the Galaxy game, and I'm about probably 70% through.
Cool.
And it is a lot of fun, actually. It's sometimes I get really burnt out on video games, and I don't play them as much as I used to. I tend to find a game I really like and just play that.
Yeah.
Until I either get done with it or I get tired of it.
The same.
And I'll move on. And of course, being Xbox people, we have Game Pass. Mm-hmm. So I'm literally never paying for a game again.
Yeah.
And so I'll just say, okay, you know, I'll try this, you know. And now they have cloud gaming on there, so you don't have to download the games. You can just go play and try it if you want. So I've been playing Guardians. It's really fun. It's you know, some like there's so many games now that go open world where sometimes that even gets to be... It's like the GTA syndrome where eventually all you do is just like wreck cars and kill people.
I think, I don't know if it's because I'm getting older.
You are getting older.
Well, it's a thing, apparently. But I get distracted.
Yeah.
And I want to just kind of do my thing. So I found open world games are just not for me anymore.
It's some of them now, they're just packed with so much crap. Like you can't even keep up with what you're supposed to be doing.
Oh, totally.
And I think because a lot of studios think that just more is better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just dump more in the game. Assassin's Creed is a good example of that because the old Assassin's Creed games are really good. And it's a really cool story that connects them all this kind of stuff. And then a couple years ago, they kind of took like a year or two break, and then they made Assassin's Creed Origins, which is in ancient Egypt, and they kind of rebooted, I guess it would be a good term, but Excuse me, yeah. Give me a hell yeah, I'm a cold ding-a-lings. What? What? We are drinking Yuengling, by the way. The beautiful beer, the ice cold ding-a-ling.
Oh, it's delicious.
But anyway, the Origins, you know, was like a reboot because people got tired of Assassin's Creed.
Hmm.
So they reinvented these games to be more like a... where they did the combat's more like free flow combat, and it's more like a more open world, bigger world, bigger maps, more stuff to do, more weapons, crafting, like some RPG elements and stuff like that. And Origins is a really good game. The game is gorgeous, and it's a, like I said, in ancient Egypt. So there's a lot of history tie in there. They had some DLC that's like some more of the like Egyptian god mythical stuff, right?
Oh, cool. Okay.
And so people are like, oh, we like that. Well, this is Ubisoft, so they have to go overboard on fucking everything, right? The next one is Odyssey, which takes place in ancient Greece.
Okay. I like that. I love.
So the game itself is a lot of fun. You get to be like this badass Spartan guy, and you get to just like, you know, just beat the shit out of people. And so it's not really... these games aren't really Assassin's Creed, because Assassin's Creed is more like a stealth sneak around.
Yeah.
But people got bored of that. So then now this is just like a balls of the wall. Like you're swinging like a flaming hammer and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then they started adding more of the, like mythological elements into it.
Right.
Especially the DLCs. It's like you're in the underworld for one, and then you're in like Atlantis for like another one. Which is cool. I played through all that. But then they wrapped up they call it the Mythic Trilogy with the Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which
is, that's what I was gonna ask,
which is Vikings. So when this game was coming out, I was like, all right, I'm gonna buy it. If you look in my game library, every single Assassin's Creed game is in there, from the very very first one the way through to Valhalla. Right, I played Valhalla for like, I don't know, probably 10 hours total. It's been out for 2 years.
Oof, woof.
The problem is, they take this idea and then they just copy it.
Right.
It reminds me that, you remember that Michael Keaton movie where he like clones himself?
Oh, Multiplicity.
And he's like, you know how you make a copy of a copy? It's not quite as sharp as the original, because like the third or fourth one is like a doofus.
I like pizza.
I like pizza. Yeah.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah. It's like that. Like Valhalla is the I like pizza of Assassin's Creed Origins. Origins is the original, and then you have Odyssey, and then you have Valhalla. And the problem is that game, like when you look at the map, there's like a billion icons on this thing.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, what am I supposed to do? The biggest problem with the game is that it's glitchy as all fuck.
Oh,
it's buggy as shit, and it's like, come on, man. You know, come on. So anyway, that's my soapbox. But to circle back around to a game like Hades, I like studios that actually put out good stuff that don't try to like... They also loaded it with like microtransactions the point where you can... You know, you're in like... What is it? Like 12th century England. And you can ride around like a unicorn with like a flaming demon helmet and all this kind of shit. It's stupid. Well, because... They have a store you can buy outfits and shit from.
So yeah, of course.
This is totally stupid. Another game that is out now is Elden Ring. I don't know if you've...
Oh, yeah. I haven't played that, but I'm well aware of it.
I saw that, and I'm like, that's right up... That'd be right up your alley, I think. I've actually considered getting it.
I've thought about it, too. I've never played a Dark Souls game. Mm-hmm. I love the aesthetic of it. I like the challenge. I think I would like the challenge.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Here's the thing about this. I've been reading a ton about it and watching some gameplay and stuff like that. I didn't play a lot of the Dark Souls. I played Dark Souls 3
little bit. Yeah, I've heard that's a and okay game to start with.
When I had a PlayStation 4, I bought Bloodborne.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, this game looks badass. And I liked everything about the game but playing it.
Oh.
Because
it's
the, you know, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was like, okay, this is the formula. Like, you walk down a street... Here's like a 30-foot werewolf who can kill you with one hit, and you have a blunderbuss and a meat cleaver, and you have to try to defend this guy. Now, what I've heard about Elden Ring is that it's obviously open world, but it's packed with stuff, not overwhelming, but you know, like the screen when you play, there's not a bunch of junk all over it.
Yeah.
And so you could be riding along on your little horse, and here's a giant enemy, and you're like, nope, and you just go around.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, with the other games, they're all linear. So when you get to like a boss, you have to beat that boss to progress, right? And obviously there's that in Elden Ring, but you can go do other stuff and build yourself up and different things like that. So I find that to be pretty interesting. Because I played Breath of the Wild on Switch.
Right.
And Breath of the Wild is kind of like that, where you can go straight to the enemy. What's his name?
Ganon.
You can go straight to Ganon right when the game starts if you want. And try to fight him like wearing a loincloth and a rake, you know.
He's gonna break that rake in half.
Or you can, but and so Breath of the Wild's like that, where it doesn't really tell you where to go.
Okay.
They're just like, hey, go wherever, and so you just kind of ride around and try to look for stuff and discover stuff, which can get a little, you know, it can be a little tiring sometimes. But once you get the hang of it, it's not that bad. And then the one thing about Breath of the Wild I'll say is that I hate the weapons breaking system. Because you get a good sword, and then you defeat a couple of enemies, and then it's broken.
Yeah, that's
I don't really care for that. But that's a game I'm still playing, actually. I haven't finished it yet.
I think I would get it. I could really get into that.
Yeah.
It seems like they went back to some of the Zelda origins. And when I was a kid, first one I played was the original.
It's a really, really good game. Playing it on Switch, too, is really cool. I wasn't sure how I'd feel about playing on Switch.
Controller. Yeah.
But when you play on it, I mean, it looks just like it would on a TV. Which, usually most handheld games, they all look different. They look goofy. Yeah. But you can, you know, you can plug into your TV and play it. You can just, then you can unhook it, hook your controllers to it, and just keep playing it. You know, it just picks up where you left off. But... yeah, that's a good game. I think maybe if Elden Ring, if I catch it on sale, I might actually get it. And
I'm thinking about it just because it's in the zeitgeist of the gaming world.
Some sadomasochism. but it is kind of fun. It actually, a lot of people say that, you know, that it's they found it to be pretty rewarding because they kind of figure out how to play the game and, you know, how to defeat enemies and kind of get the hang of it. And you do different character builds.
And there's little stuff in it I've read, like, if you do something here, it has implications down the road.
Yeah, so I might check it out.
Okay.
Two things that I've watched since we last talked I wanted to touch on.
Okay.
Reacher, which is on Prime.
We finished, that's on my list.
That's a good one.
Uh-huh.
And also Righteous Gemstones on HBO.
Oh, the televangelist?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you get caught running with a pickle in your mouth?
Did you watch the whole thing?
No, just that song.
Oh.
I'm familiar with it. I just haven't got around to watching
it. It's funny. Yeah, it's okay. Really good.
That cast is great.
We'd watched... I can't remember. We finished watching something. And so then I was like, hey, let's watch Reacher. So we watched Reacher. And Reacher's really good.
Yeah, we finished that last week.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And then went into... The Righteous Gemstones.
That's quite the transition.
Yeah, so yeah, I think there's two episodes of that left, and then I plan on going into Peacemaker.
After that. I haven't watched that either.
Yeah, so you have to watch the Suicide Squad movie.
I did. I loved it.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah,
I'm excited for the Peacemaker.
That's a good one. So that's what I've been watching.
Cool.
So, and also playing my guitar, of course.
Yeah, I need to get back to it.
Like, I see yours over there.
It's got moved. It's on the stand. Just needs to get tuned and played. I cut my finger this week, so that's not an ideal place for guitar picking.
Well, something else that occurred, obviously, since we last talked, was Scott Hall passed away. Very unfortunate. Yep. If you don't know who Scott Hall is, punch yourself in the face. No, I'm just kidding. Scott Hall was a wrestler, started off... Actually, he started way back in like Memphis days. He tag teamed with Kurt Hennig, who was Mr. Perfect, by the way, and then got into the WWE as Razor Ramon, probably one of the coolest characters I think they've ever had.
Oh yeah,
and then famously moved on to WCW to start the NWO and the Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's your thoughts on Mr. Scott Hall?
Oh man, just he was really one of my favorites. I watched a lot of 80s WWF, but I was pretty, apart from like one pay-per-view, I didn't really know a lot. But I did know who Razor Ramon was. So when he came to WCW, that was a huge, I knew that was a huge deal. And he was just so cool because he always had a toothpick and he had that look. And he was a little different than Razor, but he was still similar enough. I was like, okay, he's cool. Now, he didn't, I think in WCW, he didn't have some of that ring stuff. But it was, man, every Monday night, he was one of those guys I just loved to watch.
Yeah. I remember seeing him on, because I would watch both, WCW and WWF. And I had to look back on this a while back, but I watched the very first Monday Night Raw and started watching all of them ever since.
Oh,
when I was a kid, when it came, I think Raw started in 94. I think.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Early on,
I think it was 94.
Yeah.
And it would come on the USA Network, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I saw him for the first time. They were doing these vignettes, and you know, he's just like, "Hey, Chico," you know, all this kind of stuff, and I was like, "Wow!" Ew. But you know, the 80s WWF in the early 90s was so cartoonish, you know, because that's what they were kind of going for. Whereas like WCW and that group was more gritty and more realistic, you know, didn't have like plumbers and
T.L. Hopper.
Trash men and, you know, these job gimmicks and stuff. But I always felt like Razor was something a little beyond the, he was kind of beyond the time at the time, you know. And when he started doing that stuff with Shawn Michaels, and they had that ladder match, which was huge, and that's a good match to watch because that's something else. Just like we talked about the video games earlier, they always take something good and they just overdo it.
Yeah,
like that match had one ladder, and now you watch a ladder match, there's like 40 ladders.
Right.
And it's just a big car crash, you know? And he was a big guy, but he could move and he could work, and he had one of the best wrestling punches, I think, ever. I think him and Jerry Lawler have the two best working punches in wrestling. Jerry the King Lawler. But yeah, it's sad, man, because I read that I guess during the pandemic he got back into drinking and stuff like that. And
I hadn't heard that.
He fell at his home, broke his hip, and then laid there for like a day or two before someone found him. And then he was in kind of bad health. But also, if you haven't, go watch The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yes, for sure.
It's on Prime.
Yep.
Because Scott Hall is in that. And so you get to see him getting himself healthy during that time, or working to get himself healthy along with Jake the Snake. So yeah, it sucks, man. A lot of these guys that we watch, you know, from wrestling, and I read what Bret Hart said about him, and he said that, you know, he says maybe if we didn't have to work 300 plus days a year, you know, all of us wouldn't be dying like this and stuff like that, which is true. Those guys worked. Those guys had an insane work schedule, plus actually doing all the wrestling stuff, the physical stuff in the ring.
Yeah. PEDs doesn't help.
Plus extracurriculars to either stay healthy or heal, or keep pushing yourself, or to, you know, manage pain, things like that. So, I don't know. So, anyway, you know, cheers to the bad guy.
Well,
you give me one too.
Okay. I feel a little inappropriate drinking to the memory of Scott Hall. But
no, it's okay. He'd be cool with it.
Ayo.
Ayo. There we go. We need to get some fresh ones for the bad guy.
I think something else I think I liked about Scott Hall was he was just cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that was kind of his shtick, Razor Ramon was like, but like coming into WCW, and he had like, he'd wear like a vest and have the chest hair, and he had the greasy hair.
I mean, the thing is with wrestling is that, you and I have talked about this, wrestling is always the best when reality and
for sure
rest in the wrestling world are mixed, and some of the best characters in wrestling, quote-unquote characters or gimmicks, whatever you want to call them, is because guys, there's a lot of themselves,
right?
Like Dusty was a character, but it was also him. Ric Flair, of course.
Oh yeah.
Austin, The Rock, Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, whoever. Like, they, even The Undertaker. I mean, that, they put a lot of themselves into it, which made it believable. Mm-hmm. And even now, like CM Punk and Bryan Danielson, MJF is a good example.
Yeah, totally. Right?
There's a, and not saying that they act like that all the time, but a part of them is the character.
Right.
You know, the where one ends and one begins is blended. And that's really when, you know, that's really when it clicks and it works. And so even though Razor Ramon was like this Cuban dude, because I guess Vince McMahon watched Scarface and decided he needed a Cuban guy.
Of course.
But Scott Hall had lived in Florida for many, many years. He worked at the bars. He bounced. He worked at gyms. So he knew guys like that.
Oh, yeah.
And he knew kind of how to walk, how to talk, how to do it. And he made it cool and he made it work, you know? And you can't say that for a lot of people, you know, a lot of characters. Because I think in today's wrestling, they get settled with something that is not them. It's not the way they talk, not the way they act. Roman Reigns is a good example. For 5 years, they just pushed him as this thing that he's not. And then now, the head of the table and the tribal chief, I mean, he's just taking that and really to like a whole nother level, you know, and has been and still is. So that's good. But yeah, we'll miss Scott Hall. When he showed up on Nitro that night, that was a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because again, you didn't know if it was real or what. I mean, you didn't really know. And because this was obviously back before the internet spoiled everything.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it and I'm like, that's Razor Ramon. What's he doing on WCW? What the hell? You know? And he's like, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. You know? And he gives the spooky fingers and he just walks away, you know? And Tony Schiavone's like, what the heck is going on? You know, I've had it. You know, Bobby the Brain Heenan was there. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was a big part of it too. Yeah. So, anyway, have you watched any wrestling at all?
I watched like 5 minutes of NXT last night. Mm. So, not enough.
I've been keeping up with it a little bit, not really in any real in-depth detail. Of course, WrestleMania is coming up this week.
Right.
So, we'll see what shakes out there. But
I hope some good stuff. I really do. I want to watch wrestling to some extent, but it's also like I'm just not in the headspace.
Speaking of wrestling and slapping people.
Don't work yourself into a shoot, brother.
Don't work yourself into a shoot, brother. Poop, brother. So, I woke up the other morning. And I was having coffee, and I usually go to like Google News, like on my phone.
Same.
And I just kind of scan through stuff. I don't like a bunch of like goofy shit in my news. Like I tried a couple news apps before, and they were just stupid.
Yeah.
Like I like AP or Reuters. Like I like news. I just want kind of see what's going on. I don't want any opinions. I don't want any bunch of talking heads or anything like that. And I saw this thing about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. And I'm like, this must be a joke, right?
Yeah. Oscars. I totally thought, yeah.
I was like, at the Oscars?
This must have been typical, you know.
It's a work, brother. They're ribbing. So I watched the video and I was like, damn. Okay. You know? So I watched it again and I was like, all right. I think that's legitimate. Like, I think Will Smith. And here's my opinion now. Like, how big of a bitch do you have to be Will Smith and get up and slap a guy for making a joke? Yeah. I mean, come on. Dude, I mean, come on, man. And, of course, you know, some people are backing him. A lot of people are criticizing him. Some people are like, yeah, that's he's from Philly. I'm like, yeah, we know Philly's a shithole. You don't have to keep reminding us that. We know Philly's a dump. You don't have to keep telling everybody. We can see it.
It's like saying New Jersey's dirty or something. Like, this is an accepted fact.
Yeah, quit saying the obvious. But, it's just stupid. And then I read that he wins the Best Actor Oscar.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, how crappy of a movie year does it have to be for Will Smith to win the Best Actor?
I don't know. I mean, seriously. Will Smith is a fine actor.
Will Smith's not a very good actor. I hate to break it to you.
We'll agree to disagree.
To me, Will Smith's like the same guy in every movie he's in. Like, he talks. He's like Tom Cruise is that way.
Yeah, okay.
Like, his accent never changes. His mannerisms don't change.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he's like the same guy. And He's just dressed up in different outfits and different environments, but he's just the same guy throughout the whole thing. But I don't really have anything against Will Smith. I just think it's dumb for him to do that. And I think he's going to really regret it now. I mean, I'm sure nothing will happen to him, but...
We'll see.
What can they do? Are they going to take his trophy away?
They said he may not be invited back.
Well, he's already got his Oscar now, so why does he care?
Yeah, he don't care.
I did see, though, that Chris Rock's doing a comedy tour that kicks off this weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
And his first show is completely sold out.
The timing of something like that.
This week, yeah. So we'll see. I mean, look, Chris Rock has said some pretty controversial stuff over the years.
Oh, for sure.
But the thing is, a lot of comedians made comments about, you know, this sets a poor precedent because, you know, comedians tell jokes. That's what they do. If you have a problem with it, he should have spoke with him privately.
Right.
Instead of getting up in the middle of the whole thing. Which you really should have, you know?
But this is also so... We were talking about it. We've been talking about it the last couple of days of work. It's fascinating because... The whole Will Smith and Jada relationship is already a fiasco.
Oh, yeah. He didn't slap the 18-year-old dude that was banging her behind his back.
Yeah. Did he have I guess he had a emotional entanglement with Chris Rock's face.
Emotionally?
Have you not heard of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Heard about that.
Okay, so to me... I'll circle back to that.
Yeah.
When I first saw it, instantly thought, it's a shoot, brother. Hmm. Or it's a work brother.
Yeah.
I'm already getting my... No. I already worked myself into shoot, brother.
I'm going to call Hogan. He's not going to like that.
Oh, HH poop. So I instantly thought, oh, okay, yeah, it's fake.
Yeah.
And then I watched the video. And I've seen that look in Will Smith's face because when I have my flip outs, like, I think I have a very similar look. And the tone of his voice was just... I was like, he either is just slaying it with the acting... Or this is real. Like, he may as well give him a second Oscar.
He's not that good of an actor, so I had to be real. I fixed that for you.
Did you see Aladdin, though?
Do you know Will Smith turned down The Matrix to make the Wild Wild West movie?
Well, I mean, was he wrong to do that? So are you saying we would have had Lawrence Fishburne in Wild Wild West?
No.
Well, I think there's another... parallel universe where
Keanu Reeves would have done Wild Wild West.
Oh my god!
Speaking of shitty actors, there's one.
Yeah, he.
Tell me Keanu Reeves is a good actor.
No, I'm not going to tell you that. Okay, but he is a fine.
I like Keanu Reeves.
Comes across as a fine human being.
I said this on Twitter one night. I had a couple of whiskeys and I was like, you know who's boring as fuck? Keanu Reeves. And somebody was like, I can't believe you said that. Like three people unfollowed me.
But that's okay. It's okay to be boring. I'm about as boring as you get, but I think...
Well, your Star Trek t-shirt says otherwise, Brad.
my old man glasses and Star Trek t-shirt.
Every time I see some Star Trek, I think about... There was this... Some years back, they did a William Shatner roast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
And Artie Lang was there.
Oh.
And was it a William Shatner roast? I'm pretty sure it was. And... Artie Lang gets up there and he was like, he goes, I wasn't really much of a Star Trek fan. He goes, I had weird hobbies when I was a kid, like football, baseball, chasing pussy. Every time I see a Star Trek thing, that's the first thing I think about.
You're killing me here. You don't know where I'm at now.
You just slap yourself.
So anyways, so I thought, okay, so it's real. Well, then, like, the next day, there's some interview with Will Smith, and he's talking about how he grew up in a not-so-great family.
Well, who didn't?
Yeah, exactly.
That's an excuse.
It's an excuse. And then I got to thinking, well, and then I saw something like, well, the position of Chris Rock and blah, blah, blah. What it comes down to is Will Smith was laughing at the joke. Mm-hmm. He thought it was funny. We all thought it was funny. Jada didn't. And she whispered in his ear. And then he had to do something.
Probably.
Yeah.
Why would I do that to you?
And I get it. I mean...
I tell my wife, go slap your own people.
I mean...
I'm not your slap errand boy.
It's just like, it went from like, oh, okay, this is... this is, you're... you know, you're trying to make a statement at this point, and at that point, it's not. It's not.
Pardon? It's just dumb. It's dumb. It's dumb. The worst part about it is I thought, as I was saying, I was like, it's the hypocritical thing, because all these actors will stand up there with right. their shitty award, and they'll tell everybody watching how to live their life. Don't do this, don't do that. I'm a vessel of love and peace and healing. And even though you just slapped the shit out of some guy.
Right.
And then in his speech, he tried to use the excuse of like, because he played Venus and Serena's dad in this movie. And he's like, oh, he was a fierce defender of his family. And they all were like, nah, fuck that, man. We don't condone that shit. You know, you're not going to use our family name to try to make that connection. You know, he should have just went up there and said, look, I had a speech planned out in case I won, but I'm not going to do that, because what I did earlier was inexcusable. I'm embarrassed for myself, and I apologize to Chris Rock, everybody here in the Academy. Thank you. Good night. That's what he should have said.
But see, that requires accountability.
Yes. And you don't have accountability when you have a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Rich people don't have accountability.
And that's the thing that ultimately is kind of funny about this, because if anything, it just exposes how literally fake Hollywood is.
And wouldn't it be like all these actors, and you know, this country has a big celebrity worship problem.
Right.
All these people try to convince normal folk like you and I that they're just human beings. But yet, this happens, and he gets to trot around with his award, and he's like getting jiggy with it in the after party.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be like more of a human, relatable thing for him to come up there and say kind of what I said?
Yeah.
Like apologize and say, that was a horrible moment for me, and I'm embarrassed, and I don't feel like I deserve this award, you know? Like, to show some humility.
I was just going to say that requires humility.
Because normal people apologize all the time for stuff. Typical people. I mean, some people do. A lot of people do. A lot of normal functioning people will realize, oh shit, I fucked that up, and go back and say, listen, I was stupid.
Yeah.
But it's the culture of the celebrity thing. You know, it's the celebrity culture where there's no real consequence. There's no real...
Exactly.
You know, and they aren't bothered with normal stuff. It's like that show Succession on HBO. Have you watched that?
No.
What a beautiful, gorgeous show.
Yes, you told me good things.
The third season was done kind of during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see any of them... Like, they don't talk about it, and they don't wear masks. There's none of that. Because a lot of shows now, people wear masks. And one of the actors on the show said, well, these people are super rich, so they wouldn't be bothered by that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which makes sense, right? Yeah. They don't have to deal with that kind of shit. Their father owns this huge media company. They have billions of dollars, private helicopters, cars, trains, planes, all kinds of shit. So they don't have to deal with that typical crap of like putting on a mask just to go to the grocery store and stuff like that. So I mean, I think, you know, it's just, if they don't invite him back, who cares? Like, what is that going to do?
But that does is tarnish the image of the celebrity that says, hey, this guy's being held accountable for his actions. Because the thing is, we go and because essentially they're coworkers, right? They are at an event. Mm-hmm. They're honoring each other. And you went up and you slapped a coworker? Well, what would happen? Well, you'd either be fired, and I understand you could say, okay, he's not getting invited back. No, right. There would be, if I went and slapped one of my coworkers, I'm either going to be fired or get arrested or both.
See, the problem is, they knew he was going to win the best actor.
Right.
And I think that's why they didn't make him leave.
Right.
I think if not for that, if he was just there and not up for any awards or anything, they probably would have just told him to leave, and they wouldn't have made like a deal about it. He just would have left. Because most of the people in the crowd, you don't even know they're in the crowd unless the camera points them out, or someone makes a joke, mm-hmm. or they get an award, or they're up for an award, and you see their disappointed face when they don't win. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I hope Chris Rock just shreds him on every stage he's on.
I can't wait to see the
clips. By the way, props to Chris Rock, because he had his hands behind his back and stood there and got slapped.
And that's...
And,
Yeah.
And he didn't, like, change up anything. He didn't do, like, nothing. What's funny, and here it is again. I was reading this thing about how, like, on the commercial break, Chris Rock is standing on the stage by himself. And you have, like, these little actor people, like, hugging and consoling Will Smith, and he's crying. He didn't get slapped.
Right.
Why are you consoling the guy who just slapped the guy?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's not like she has, like, some deadly disease. Her fucking hair fell out. Like, she doesn't have, like, leukemia or AIDS or something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on.
I thought she had alopecia.
Alopecia? Yeah, but that's not...
It's like a common...
Well, I'm saying that's not like a deadly... She's not dying from her hair falling out. I mean, it's not like it's that serious.
And it's Chris Rock.
It's Chris Rock.
It's like... I mean, I don't know if it's because I was like a teenager watching Def Comedy Jam.
They should thank Chris Rock for even mentioning them.
Oh, for sure. Because we know she ain't going to be up for an Oscar anytime
unless
soon.
Unless she's in G.I. Jane, too.
I think it's on the table now.
Her and Will Smith should do it. That'd be one of the shittiest movies of all time. That'll replace the... he did that After Earth movie with his weird, goofy son.
I can't do that. I don't even want to try to watch that movie.
Which, what they should do next year at the Oscars, they should stand up there and read every review for After Earth.
That's his punishment.
And then show pictures of his dipshit son wearing a dress and being a stupid ass. That's what they should fucking do. So, fuck you, Will Smith.
Oh, or maybe show their 16-year-old daughter hanging out with like a 35-year-old man.
No, that's cool, though. That's Hollywood, baby. Did you ever watch the Golden Globes when Ricky Gervais hosted?
Oh my gosh. You read my mind. I was like,
what? I saw this. What I did.
How many times has Ricky Gervais been slapped?
Never. After this happened, I went to Ricky. I was like, I got to see what Ricky Gervais could say. And he posted this clip of an alopecia joke from the British Office. He did.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, one of the funniest things that he joked about Harvey Weinstein, who. Everybody knew what he was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he made a joke, and people were like, ooh. He goes, what? He's your friend. He's like, don't boo me. He's your friend.
That's all.
And with Epstein, too. He's your friend.
That's all time.
And everybody's just like sitting there like, because they know it's true. They can't say anything.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I just really, to me, just, I think this, is, if anything, if you're listening to this and you're just on the fence, like, realize that they are terrible people.
Yes.
They pretend they entertain us, but we should not go anything beyond appreciating that they made us laugh or cry or do whatever.
Yeah.
Because they're just people.
We can't pretend to even think that we know these people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's not, you know, that he, you know. No, you don't fucking know these people. Because once you, like, have all this money and access to everything you want, like, you're totally beyond what anybody else is. And... You know, there are some, I don't know, I mean, as far as like good actors, I mean, yeah, they're, but the really good actors don't get mixed up in bullshit like this. You know, they just do their shit. And it makes me like when I, because the Oscars now is so fucking lame.
I mean, I think it's one of those like really sad, like callback things to the past where that is a thing purely for them because. No, I would assume the ratings have been going down for years now.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, outside of some Hollywood writer or the actors themselves or anybody making money off of that, how is that award show relevant to you or I?
It really isn't because most of the movies now that win, they win not based on merit of movie, but they win because of diversity, really. Because that's the diversity thing now, right? Which is fine. A movie should win based on, is it a good movie or not?
Exactly.
It doesn't care the color of the person who made it. It doesn't care the sexual orientation. Doesn't matter. That none of that should matter. Let's just look at if it's a good movie. Like now, they're going to start disqualifying movies from Best Picture if they don't have a certain number of diversity in the crew. And yeah. Like if the crew's not diverse enough and all this kind of shit. It's fucking stupid.
Listen, I'm a 42-year-old man from Southwest Missouri.
In a Star Trek t-shirt.
In a Star Trek t-shirt and old man glasses.
The whitest person you've ever seen. I'm blinded.
I am about the most well, I guess I'm fairly liberal. I'm a champion for diversity and for things that are different than Southwest Missouri white bread. That being said, you can't shoehorn that into our lives. It has to be a willing choice.
It doesn't work because then it just feels like it's just being done just for the sake of it.
Right. And if you just do something just for the sake of it, it has no lasting impact. There's no meaning to it. You're checking boxes. You're not living that.
And it's kind of like the NFL Rooney Rule, where they...
I mean, and again, it's like the sad thing is that rule is necessary because it's not happening on its own.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean you're going to get the qualified coach? Well, no, because you're kind of forced to do it. The goal is that should happen without it being a rule. But the thing is, people don't want to. They don't want to be diverse, and they don't want to try to. You want to have a league with 80% black people. But you don't want to. You want to keep it coached by 95% white people. It's like, you can't shoehorn it, but it just needs to come naturally. And actors, you can't just force a cast. You need to have a natural cast as appropriate for the script and for the story.
I agree. Like people talked about, there was talking about a black Batman at some point, right? And people kicked around Idris Elba. You know who that is,
right? Oh yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, he would be a good Batman.
Yeah, he'd be awesome.
I think. I don't... Like, that doesn't matter to me as much. But I think what should... I think a better idea would be, why not create, like, a really new, cool story and center it around a black hero?
Well, I got one for you. Miles Morales, Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, I was going to say Blank Man, but...
Oh, my gosh.
You ever seen Blank Man?
Oh, it's been too many... Too many years, Damon Wayans, right?
Think about electronics. Think about electronics.
Oh my gosh, I gotta watch that again.
What a good fucking movie. I love that movie.
Who all is in that?
I don't know. Damon Wayans, oh my gosh. But I don't remember.
Early 90s Damon Wayans.
And he had the yellow kitchen gloves on. Yes. And the sock around his head. Oh my god, that's such a good movie. But anyway, yeah, I mean,
good.
The story, you know, make a good story. I know.
Oh, I love it.
You know, just have a good story. Yeah. And like Miles Morales, like, I don't know if we've talked about Into the, what's it called? Into the Multiverse? Spider-Man in the Multiverse?
I think it's, well, there's Multiverse of Madness with Doctor Strange, too.
No, I'm talking about the Miles Morales into the movie.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Anyway, that's probably one of my favorite comic book movies.
For sure.
Of all time. I mean, that's such a good movie. And, I loved it. I mean, it was really cool. And I didn't really, you know, I wasn't like, oh man, you know, he's black. I don't know about this. But the story was written in a way that everything made sense.
And everything else around it, the music, his uncle, everything.
The home life, his uncle, his dad, the music, the vibe, the way he was has... Spider-Man and I mean the whole thing. I liked it. I liked the whole thing. I watched it twice, and I watched it the first time on an airplane, and then I watched it again. I rented it again at home because I wanted to watch it again. I was like, man, this movie's
not on a plane.
This movie's awesome. Yeah, but yeah, that's a great movie. I mean, I think stuff like that should make sense. And we'll, obviously now we'll transition. That's our segue into the Batman. Because there's a cool line in The Batman where Zoe Kravitz, who plays Catwoman, talks about the rich white privilege, you know, and white privilege, and these guys who get away with stuff because they have money and all this kind of stuff. And it makes sense. I mean, it does happen. And you can slap people at the Oscars if you have money. What if you slapped Chris Rock? What do you think would happen?
Oh, straight to jail. Do not collect $200. Go straight to jail.
So... The Batman. What did you think about just overall? Now, this is spoilers, by the way. If you haven't seen The Batman, for sure, we're going to spoil it. The Titanic sinks. Jesus dies, but he does come back. So, spoilers.
I don't need 3 hours to do a play-by-play, but it was great. It was a detective story. It was dark. It was gritty. It was Batman. But it felt new. And we're on how many, you know, which Batman movies?
Oh, yeah,
I was
going to mention that too, yeah.
And it felt like you could have taken away all those other movies. Some 15-year-old kid watching a Batman movie for the first time. And he's like, oh, okay, this is great.
Yeah. When it first starts and just my first impression of it. Like, the you have the mayor there, and he's on the phone, and you have this guy creeping around.
Oh, and yeah.
Paul Dano is such a good fucking actor, man. Even in this, where he's got, like, a mask on, the way he's just, like, he gives out that, like, that, that fucking, like, like, spooky-ass, like, shriek as he, like, clubs this dude, you know? And and I like that he just gets right into it. Everybody on Earth knows Bruce Wayne's parents were murdered. We don't have to go back through that again.
Mm-hmm.
We know this, right? And, of course, it's mentioned because it does play into the story, but we don't waste time saying, oh, that's how he got the Batmobile. That's how he got his suit. Like, nobody cares about that shit. It's been done. Go read Year One. It's a fantastic comic, by the way. And but that explains a lot. And this, a lot of this was derived from there. Of course, Batman Begins was, I'm going to go back to other Batman movies, too, because I was kind of bouncing back and forth thinking about them. Batman Begins I liked because it was very earnest. It was very kind of, you know, it had some grit to it. I think it kind of lingered a little too long getting him into the bat suit a little bit.
Yeah.
This didn't. So it was like, you know, he's Batman. He's in Year Two, I believe, is what they mentioned.
Oh, okay. So I missed that. I did not catch that.
And I like that he's doing... Remember when I mentioned on the last episode where, you know, I missed, like, the inner monologue for Batman?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And now they have it in this movie where he's talking and he's doing the case diaries, which is also from the comics, where he's taking notes of his cases. So, because in the comics, when Batman's, like, in a situation, they always have the inner monologue, like, in the comic.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of read, like, what he's thinking, how he's processing stuff. And they didn't do that to that extent in this movie, but they did have, like, him talking, like a voiceover kind of thing. And kind of what he's thinking and what he's feeling and trying to figure it out. And, you know, it's a detective story. And I think we're all desensitized because now the superhero movies are like CGI fests.
Right.
They're space monsters. There's really... I think when you make a comic book movie, there's two ways to go. Either like super realistic, gritty, darkish, or just fucking balls to the wall, like space monsters and spaceships and CGIs and all this kind of stuff. And this is definitely more than the crime noir grittiness kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, it reminded me, it kind of gave me like vibes from the movie Seven. Because it's raining,
yeah,
and you have like these weird crime scenes, and there's riddles, kind of, and like Seven is like that, where they're, there's riddles, and you know, it's just everything's kind of like, everything's very uneasy, you know, which I like. It kind of gives you, I felt that watching this movie, like I was like, you know, you didn't know what was gonna happen, but like you said, it still felt fresh, and. Because there's been so many Batman movies, and there's been, everybody has their favorites, or their favorite, like, iterations. You know, I liked Michael Keaton more as Bruce Wayne, actually, than Batman. Because I thought he, like, as Bruce Wayne, he has to put people off. Like, he has to be looked at as, there's no way this guy would fly around at night and beat up people.
Right.
Right? Not from like a, not because he's wimpy, but just because like he doesn't come across as that guy. So Michael Keaton, and by the way, when they casted Michael Keaton in 1988, people wrote letters and called the studio and complained.
Yeah.
Because he was too short. He was Beetlejuice and Mr. Mom.
Yeah.
And he can't be Batman, you know, because it's the 80s, so it needs to be Stallone, Schwarzenegger, or Clint Eastwood. I mean, those are your choices. And they actually did want Clint Eastwood, but Clint Eastwood said, I'm too old. I'm not going to do it. And because they were going to do... Tim Burton wanted to do Dark Knight Returns, which is the Frank Miller comic from 85. And it's an older Batman who comes back years after retiring.
Oh, okay.
So he actually wanted Clint Eastwood initially, and Clint Eastwood's like, no. Because Clint Eastwood, also, they also wanted him to do more Dirty Harry movies. And he's like, it's not realistic for a guy my age to be doing that kind of stuff. So anyway, the story with that is Tim Burton calls Michael Keaton. They go to lunch. And Michael Keaton and Tim Burton says, I want to make a Batman movie. And Michael Keaton says, okay. And he says, I want you to be Batman. And Michael Keaton's just like, he never read a comic or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, and so Tim Burton hands him a copy of The Dark Knight Returns. And he's like, I want you to read this because this is kind of what I want to do. And so that's kind of what they went off on their own. The very Tim Burton-esque kind of thing. But that's a, that's still, like, to me, that's really, really, I think, a really great movie. And that was a big deal. This movie, to me, it has a lot of similarities to that because people didn't like Robert Pattinson as Batman. They thought he was too small. He'd been a glittery vampire. And he's made a bunch of like indie movies and stuff like that. And which, if you haven't seen The Lighthouse, I would highly recommend it.
Okay.
But as it turns out, he's really fucking good. And he's a really, really good fucking actor.
Yeah.
And this Bruce Wayne, though, is, you know, kind of the, people call it like emo a little bit.
I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah. But one thing is from the trailer, because they show him with the makeup around his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, he's like an emo makeup wearing Batman. And as Matt Reeves said, who made this movie, every Batman has worn black eye makeup under the hood, but they never show it.
Right.
Because they just never did. And in Batman Returns, Michael Keaton is seen without the cowl twice. Once is in the Batcave, where he pulls out one of Catwoman's claws from his side.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I've seen these movies a couple times, by the way. But he doesn't have any makeup around his eyes. But if you see him in the cowl, he has black makeup around his eyes. Right. And then, of course, at the end of the movie, in that scene where he rips the cowl off, where he's begging her to not kill herself and Max Schreck, because she's going to kiss him with the taser and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because there's a quick cut to him, and you can see like just like white, his white skin, like in the eye holes of his mask, because he doesn't have any black makeup on.
Oh, I miss
that. And the next scene, he rips the cowl off.
Yeah.
And he has no makeup on because I guess they didn't want to show it. Well, in this case, in this movie, they actually show it, which makes sense because he would have that on. And so the visual of that, I think, is pretty cool with him, like, coming back to the Batcave, and he's, like, you know, sweaty, and he's tired, and he's exhausted, and he's kind of banged up, and he's got the grease, the makeup on, you know. But I think the emo stuff kind of plays in because of Robert Pattinson, and because of doing the vampire movies. You know, people just identify that with him, unfortunately.
But I kind of like that because, to me, it kind of went two ways. One, as Bruce Wayne, it's early on, year two.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he has the money. I mean, Alfred sets it up that, you know, they're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
Things are rough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw that as, okay, it's still early on. We know that this Bruce Wayne can be that down exactly. the road. Those other kind of Bruce Waynes.
Yeah.
Like, he, and there's a greater story that they and some points they make. I'll get back to that. But as Batman, you know, he's still young and he's full of fury and anger. And it's like, we all knew that kid growing up, or, you know, as we got older, he's little, or, you know, he's smaller,
yeah.
but he's a scrapper. Or
right.
he could, you know, like, if you're filled with fury, you can do some scary stuff. And that's how I read that.
Yeah, that's how I read it too, is, you know, he's trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Because Alfred's talking to him, like you said, in that one time, he's talking to him about the, there's another one in there if you want.
Yeah.
He's talking about the, like, office people needing to meet with him. He's like, I don't care about that, you know? And because he's so focused and driven on what he's doing, he doesn't care about this other stuff. And it makes a lot of sense to think, okay, well, he hasn't figured that part out yet. Because he's just focused on this Batman thing and doing what he's doing. And He doesn't know how to be this other person. Because even when he goes to the mayor's funeral as Bruce Wayne, and Falcone is there, and he's like, oh, you're the only, the Gotham's other second recluse other than myself. You know, kind of saying, like, you never see him out. Never see him anywhere. You know, he's not out and about and stuff like that. He's not, you know, buying hotels and drinking with women, and which, you know, Batman doesn't drink in the comics, by the way, but Zack Snyder had Batfleck fucking chugging scotch and stabbing people. I hate Zack Snyder. I don't hate Zack Snyder personally. I hate him professionally. I hate his Batman movie. Well, not even a Batman movie. The Justice League. Batman versus Superman. I hated it.
Yeah, terrible.
There's one good part in Batman versus Superman. That's the warehouse fight scene where they go to save Superman's mother. And it's in Batman versus Superman, yes.
Okay, yeah.
And where Batman like crashes through the window and he's just like, bam, bam, you know, beating up people. And I'm like, yeah. And then he just fucking stabs this guy. And then, he, you know, I'm like, whoa, what are we doing? What the fuck? And I know, man, people are like, just get over it. But this is it. You know, even in this movie, The Batman, he's like, no guns. You know, no guns. We're not doing that. No. And that, because that's a part of the character.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the basic things of the character is built on. And I'll never forget, there's two things I thought about when we went to see this movie. The last time I was in a movie theater was when I saw Batman versus Superman.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I was just thinking about what a contrast mm-hmm. these two movies are.
Mm-hmm.
And what a waste
mm-hmm.
for... Because I didn't mind Ben Affleck as Batman, you know? The bigger... And they were going for the Dark Knight Returns Batman with the short ears and the... kind of bigger and bulkier.
I like that look. Yeah, I think it was fine.
That comes from Dark Knight Returns. Like a bigger, bulkier Batman. I'm cool with that, you know? But, God, you know, that whole thing was such a waste. And it really gave me more appreciation for this movie, The Batman, which is like it's legitimate filmmaking. Like, it's not just pumping out a movie. It's real filmmaking. You know, I'm sure there's probably some CGI in this. I didn't see there was a ton. But you don't get like the piss filter, like all Zack Snyder movies are like piss colored.
See,
and CGI capes and slow motion thing that was cool with 300.
I love 300. 300, so that's...
300's a cool movie, you know, but... You know,
in Batman and Superman. You can't have that stuff. Now they made some choices in this. One was a focus, the camera focus.
And I've heard I noticed that.
It has a term. I don't know what it's called, but it's when you focus on a kind of a central point, and mm-hmm. then you have some fuzziness around the edges.
Yes,
and that was so cool.
Yeah,
and it created like a. It was an intentional level of focus, but it really forced you to, you could focus on something, but not have to have something tell you to.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
I like that. I also liked like when they showed him like on the motorcycle, you get the camera like on the side of the bike, next to the street. Uh-huh. The car chase, when he's chasing Penguin, was really, really well mm-hmm. done. That was the part they showed in the trailer.
Yeah.
But... I was really excited to see that because I wanted to see how it unfolded. And the way that was done was I thought was really cool. The Batmobile, that's always like a big thing with Batman movies. Like, what's the Batmobile? I like the way this looked. It reminded me of the car from like Mad Max, kind of.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. And you could definitely tell it's this thing that he put together. Like he made this car. You know, it doesn't have a bunch of, like, fancy shit on it.
It didn't even have guns on it, did it?
No, Batman doesn't need guns.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize that. Every other Batmobile has had guns or missiles or mines or bombs.
It's because they don't get it right.
Oh, my gosh.
Although there's a... In the Dark Knight Returns comic, it's like the monster truck Batmobile.
Oh, that'd
and
be sweet.
He's, like, mowing people down. And he's, like... And there's a quick little thing where it's just, like... These rubber bullets should do the trick. They're firing like a million rubber bullets a second. So I'm not sure how non-lethal that would be. You know.
And well, they didn't die from bullets. They died from the trauma of all the
And then, of course, in the 89 Batman, the Batmobile drops like grenades and shit on people. And like it acts as chemicals. Like
That's what I was thinking of.
Grenades come out of the wheels.
Yes.
It's like ding, ding, ding. Boom.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. One of my favorite scenes in a movie ever is when the Batmobile armors up.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He's like, shields. That was cool. The Batmobile in this was really cool, and I like the use of the motorcycle. I thought that was really neat.
And it would make sense that he would probably be on a motorcycle more.
What did you think about Colin Farrell as the Penguin?
He was great. Of course, when I saw the trailer, I didn't recognize him. Had to look that up.
I didn't recognize him either, and I was surprised at first, because I was like, well, it's Colin Farrell? But it makes sense, because he's a really good actor. He can actually do characters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got a good range.
And he's not like just, you know, a lot of people talk about Jack Nicholson's Joker in Tim Burton's Batman, where he's just like chewing up scenery and just laughing, and he's like, well, you know, whatever. But of course, I mean, Heath Ledger, I think, set the bar for Batman villains.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's just a perfect movie, The Dark Knight, and he was incredible. Colin Farrell was really good. And I like that he went back to the Penguin as like this like sleazy like mob kind of guy, which is that's the origin of the character, and that's more in line with what the character is. The Penguin's more like a nickname, not like a physical deformity. Although I love Danny DeVito, and I like him in his Rubber Duck and his Circus Gang. And
I can say I got two things to say about the Penguin.
Oswald Cobblepot.
I was a little disappointed that no rockets were strapped to Penguins.
I know. I know.
Liked to have seen that.
I know. And see, maybe he may get into that.
And that's okay.
Because he had the Iceberg Lounge and the whole deal. So,
and that's a great thing about this movie. And I'm just really impressed. Like, the more we talk about it and stuff you're telling me, like, I'm more impressed with it. Because it feels like a launching point where you could totally start the franchise over.
You could. And have some continuity. And actually have, like, these characters. One of my favorite things about this movie, too, was the relationship between Batman and Commissioner Gordon. Because that's something, to me, that's always been whiffed on in the movies. Like, the Dark Knight trilogy had its some.
I felt they did a decent job.
A decent job. But nowhere near what it is in the in the comic books and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, for sure.
And in the 89, in the Tim Burton movies, it was, like, non-existent.
Who was it was Gordon?
Pat Hingle played Commissioner Gordon. And he's like, look for the signal! You know? But they almost had like no interaction whatsoever. Yeah. This was cool because this was in those early days, kind of like in year one, where Gordon is like one of the very few cops that aren't corrupt. And that's why him and Batman trust each other. And I love they show this movie with Gordon like sticking his neck out for him and defending him. Like in that scene where he gets knocked out with a bomb. And he's back at the police headquarters, and Gordon helps him escape, and that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And he's got the signal up on the roof and stuff like that. But it didn't feel like hokey or anything. Like they were working together.
Mm-hmm.
And when Batman walks into that first crime scene, which they show in the trailer, and I remember reading people were like, why is he just walking in there? It's like, well, that's what he used to fucking do for 80 fucking years. He's a detective. You jagaloons. Get me started.
I mean, he was essentially a cop without the badge.
He wanted to help. He wanted to help out because of his... And I thought when they got into the story of his dad and Falcone kind of Falcone blackmailing him, like, I'm like, okay, this is new, right?
It was... And the stuff with Martha, too. And
the stuff with Martha. Now, I knew a lot of people didn't... This wasn't talked about a lot, but Martha, it was covered in comics that she was in Arkham.
Oh, so yeah. When it comes to comics,
he had some of that in him. Kind of was the story, but it was never. I don't think it's never been like a huge talking point.
Really. Okay.
At least not in the movies.
For sure.
Because usually in the movies, the parents are just the props. Kind of, they're just like slow motion. Scenes of them getting shot and a kid screaming.
Pearls getting tossed.
Pearls, yes, of course.
A guy that kind of looks like Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. That guy did look like Jack
Nicholson. Or was it Jack Nicholson?
No, it wasn't. But the guy they in the 89 movie that they did this, that guy looked like, a lot like Jack Nicholson.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, he looked like a young Jack Nicholson. Like he had the eyebrows and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
I liked the way they introduced Catwoman without because here's the thing. Comic books are hard to do, I think, in movies because a lot of these characters are so fucking cheesy. It can be very schlocky, which some schlock in comic movies I think is good. Like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, especially the first one.
Yes.
It had some charm and some fun. It had some of that comic book schlock. But also Sam Raimi's such a good fucking director that it was just, they were just really well made.
It felt appropriate.
It felt appropriate. And see, because it has to make sense for, you can do anything in a story as long as it fits within the world you've created.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about this movie, The Batman. Would Superman make sense in this world? No. Because so far we haven't seen anything that indicates aliens or any of this other wacky shit, right? This is very like detective stuff, street level kind of shit that Batman should be handling, in my opinion. And so it has to make sense. You know, when they did The Man of Steel, they made references to Gotham and they had Bruce, and they made like, and there was a satellite had Wayne Enterprises on it. And
right.
So we're like, okay, so this is a shared thing. And then, of course, beginning of Batman versus Superman, you see Batfleck, Bruce Wayne, running into the rubble, and these two aliens are laser eyeing each other. So that's the world that they're setting up, where these people all live in the same world, which makes sense. The Dark Knight trilogy, like, that stuff wouldn't fit, because it's, they never mentioned it, it was never shown, it was never indicated. Like, they didn't talk about Metropolis, you know, like they do in some other ones. They did that in the, was it Batman Forever, I think?
Oh, yeah, there's a joke.
With Val Kilmer, where he's like, you should be halfway to Metropolis by now, or something like that. And then, there's also one where he says, this is why Superman works alone. I don't know which one that was. Could have been Val Kilmer, I think.
Oh, I was thinking about, can I take a quick tangent?
Of course. This is a tangent.
Batman. It's a podcast.
You never podcasted before? We stay on track on my Star Trek discussion.
Much like the Dark Souls games.
Much like those.
I have a special love for Batman Forever. Mm. But I think it's because it came out when I was like 13 or 14.
I mean, those movies, I mean, you know, I'm very nerdy about that kind of shit. Like, I'll read about the filmmaking and like, the behind-the-scenes stuff. And so, apparently, they made the 89 Batman, they made Batman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Burton wanted to do, like, Batman Year One, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Keaton was on board, and the studio didn't want to do it. They wanted to do this other kind of thing. So Tim Burton's like, okay, well, sleep. I'm out. Apparently they offered Michael Keaton so much money to do a third Batman movie that he's never actually said the exact number, but he turned it down. And then they moved on. They got Joel Schumacher and Val Kilmer. And, of course, Nicole Kidman, Jim Carrey, Tommy Lee Jones. And it's like 90s encapsulated.
And that's the thing.
In this whole thing.
It is largely a nostalgic kind of kick for me. But also I think they set that world up to where all of that is okay.
Yeah.
Everything is a cheesy. Everything is over the top.
Everybody's over the top. Like, everybody's just...
And again, that movie, we can't compare it to The Batman.
Mm.
But we can say that is appropriate for what they set up and what they delivered.
They put it in the world, so yeah.
Works.
Yeah, you set up the world, you make the rules, just like any movie, TV show, any book, anything. You know.
So getting back from that, so that was appropriate for that. So what I loved about the Batman and with getting to Catwoman is that she comes across as, you know, sneaky, capable, smart, strong. Mm-hmm. Like, all the, you know, the Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just something a little bit different about her, like, in her few fight scenes.
Yeah.
She moved just a little, almost too fast.
Yeah.
Like, in a good way. Like, you just tell it, she's just that badass. Like, she could just, she could kick butt, and it was quick, and she just took care of it. It wasn't these big, long, protracted fight scenes.
Right.
She just knocked out the guy, and that was it. And it was great. And that...
Yep. I was going to mention that, because I think, like... The different iterations of Catwoman, going back to the 66 Batman with Adam West And of course, Eartha Kitt played Catwoman. And she played it very like this, like Marilyn Monroe kind of Ginger from Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
You know, like this very, like a va-va-voom, like a very, I don't know how to say it, like a Hollywood starlet kind of, you know, hey, Batman, you know, that kind of thing, right? Which is cool. And she was a jewelry thief and everything like that. And then like Michelle Pfeiffer, of course, in Batman Returns, they did this whole other thing where she, you know, essentially dies and is resuscitated by cats biting her and licking her. And
I really thought about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically. And then she's like, but she did such a good job of the whole thing. Because again, she's a great actress, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then we saw the other end of that, like the Halle Berry Catwoman movie, which is everybody universally just hates. And but it made sense in that, in what they did with, in the Tim Burton universe in the way they did it, right? So it's like, that made sense. And of course, Anne Hathaway in Dark Knight Rises, you know, which people were kind of a little iffy on. But, you know, this, her, Zoe Kravitz, I mean, she had a purpose. It made sense for what she was doing, mm-hmm. made sense. She had a story where she grew up in this club and her mom worked there. And, you know, so she had like this personal grudge, and she had her own issues, and she had like money issues, and she was struggling.
I mean, her relationship with the girl. Where is she?
Yeah, which is very, very human. Like, it's a very, that I think is very relatable, as we talked about earlier about people relating to people. And I think it's cool, is like Bruce Wayne kind of realized that, oh, people look at me the way they look at Falcone because I'm a rich person. Or grew up rich and stuff like that. And I think that's part of the inner conflict with him, mm-hmm. is that he's almost fighting against kind of what he is as far as economic class is. Because a lot of those guys he takes down, you know, especially early on in his Batman, in his Batmaning, are rich people who take advantages and at the disadvantage of regular working people. And I think in this, it showed that a lot more, where he kind of has this realization when him and Catwoman are talking about it. She talks about like the rich privilege and white privilege and stuff like that. You know, he's just like, oh, I felt like he kind of was realizing that he could very well be that himself, you know, if he allowed himself to be.
And that's what I ultimately really liked about the movie. And it took me like a day or so to kind of figure it out, was most of the movie, he is, I am vengeance.
Yeah.
That's the theme. Mm-hmm. But by the end, essentially, I am hope, or he is a symbol of hope.
And the end, of course, he, you know, drops into that water, takes out that power line.
Yeah.
So he does something to help all these other people instead of just, because I feel like he was very focused on, I am vengeance, like you were saying. I am vengeance. I want to take this guy out, you know. But then he thought about all these other people. And so he did this thing to try to help all these other people, risked his life to help all these other people.
And someone could then argue, well, that's just a white savior complex or something. It's like, no, I mean, it's appropriate. This is a guy who's, you know, through his time with Catwoman, or, you know, whatever.
I forget,
and seen, the possibility of even how his father could be corrupted to an extent. Like, this is a chance for him to redeem himself, mm-hmm. and to become more than just a creature of the night. And that's something I felt stood this move, this character, this Batman out, this Bruce Wayne out from the other ones. Like, there really is an evolution throughout the movie. Really like that.
There is, because at the beginning, if you remember, he talks about how, the very beginning, there's like a voiceover, and he's like, I can't be everywhere, you know, and this kind of, and it shows people getting robbed and people getting beat up and all, and then they do the really cool subway scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where he beats up the guys in the face paint. And I think through the movie and his interactions with Catwoman, he kind of, you know, he risks his life to save like a huge, this pretty large number of people who were down in the water, instead of just focusing on taking out this guy or beating up this guy or taking out this guy. Yeah. So it's a different kind of heroism, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, which I thought was cool, and also was this, you know, more people, the public at large, I guess, get to see, like, this heroic thing that he did,
right?
Which, you know, kind of adds to the Batman story itself for the whole city. I also liked that the city actually flooded. Like, he didn't, like, it didn't, it wasn't really stopped. Like,
oh, yeah, no, it's, I was really surprised. I was like,
yes.
I was like, oh, this is just like, you know, when they saw the explosions and they saw the stuff, like, oh, this is kind of like a vision of what could happen. Like, I'm just so.
No,
like,
it actually happened.
And it was, like it was amazing. I was like, by the end, I was like, oh, wow, they really.
Yeah.
They really are trashing Gotham.
And Paul Dano was the Riddler. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And when he and Batman have that conversation, finally, and it is like, and he talks about Bruce Wayne, and then, you know, of course, Batman thinks, oh, shit, he knows who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but he's like, you know, then he realizes, oh, no, he doesn't. No, it's me.
And that was great because I, at that moment, I was like, when he was like, start talking about Bruce Wayne, I was like, he doesn't. He doesn't know he's Batman. And that was like such a great, like,
that was it was good.
Automatically I thought, well, I'm dumb and I misinterpreted that. Like, no, he, you know, this is, that's part of it. And that's great. A great way to tell that story.
Part of it was that he, you know, he wanted Batman to help him. Like, and he was seeking Batman's, like, approval for all the stuff that he had done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and He was trying to get Batman's attention. Like, he was kept trying to get his attention and wanting him to help him, you know, complete this mission he was doing. And so I liked that. And I liked that, he, you know, the explosions happened. The city actually flooded. Because at the end it shows, like, the city's all flooded and stuff. Yeah, yeah. And it's very open-ended.
Yeah.
You know, and not in, like, a hokey way, but it's just, it's very open-ended. Like, we got to this point in the story and here we are. And, of course, it shows, I guess there's a deleted scene with the Joker. And I guess the guy that talks to Riddler at the very end is supposed to be the Joker. We don't get a good look at him.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny because he's like, you know, he says something like, you know, everybody thinks you're a clown, or one day, next day, everyone thinks you're a clown or something like that.
So did you read up on that anymore?
Not very much, no.
Okay. Have you heard of the man that smiles?
Yes.
Okay. So that's something that they were trying to get across. This is very similar to the man that smiles. Mm-hmm. Like, he's basically born, if you're not familiar, someone's not familiar with the story, like, this is a character that's born with some sort of facial deformity.
Yes.
Or something, and he has to go through his whole life with a smile.
Yes.
And it takes it beyond, like, you know, like Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson, where it's more of the environment or, you know, his family or whatever causes it. Like, this is something that this guy has had to live with his whole life, mm-hmm. and he reluctantly kind of adopts this, or, you know, because he probably goes insane or whatever. So it was fascinating. I had never heard about the man that smiles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, yeah.
So to me, it was like this new thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that is really cool.
I didn't read a ton about it because I saw there was the deleted scene, and I'm like, why did he delete that? It's so stupid. You know, that's kind of cool. But I get it. The movie was a little long. But I never found myself, like, wanting it to end.
And that was weird. The great thing about that was, because I think I got up once to go, you know, hit the concession stand. And I was like, man, I don't want to miss anything. And I felt like I probably did in 3 hours. You know, I got up for 5 minutes and I felt like I missed something. To me, that's a great sign.
No, it was. It overall, a fantastic movie. Loved it. I would put it up there with The Dark Knight. I would put it up there with 89 Batman.
Yep.
Those are my top three, followed by Batman Returns. And the rest are in there. Batman Begins, I think, is up there. I mean, I like Dark Knight Rises as well. I think The Dark Knight, though, it's hard to follow that.
Yeah.
But Tom Hardy did a really good job. The Bane voice is legendary.
Yeah. And there's stuff in that I really like about Dark Knight Rises, but I think that's another movie that kind of gets lost, I think, about halfway through.
Yeah. We should talk about that sometime.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We can dive into that. Because there's a lot of, cool. I like a lot about that movie. There's some stuff I don't like. But
Well, Dark Knight, or So Dark Knight is fresh in my mind because I watched it like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I watched Batman Begins like, you know, 6 months ago. But I haven't watched Dark Knight Rises in like 2 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Totally. We'll have to watch it and refresh.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And then we can talk about it. But, yeah, the Batman is, I think they should continue this, what they're doing. Keep away from all the space fucking horse shit.
Yeah.
Don't drag him into their Flash multiverse thing that they're doing now. Exactly. The Flash movie, I think, is going to have Michael Keaton in it, apparently.
And I'm okay with that. I don't know what you're opinion.
By the way, the actor who plays Flash just got arrested again.
Oh, yeah, he's a douchebag.
He's a fucking dipshit. Yeah. I don't see how this guy... Look, here's what needs to happen. Either fire that asshole and get the guy who plays the Flash on the TV show.
Yes.
Grant Gustin. Who's a great Flash and a great human being and not a fucking pissant bitch like Ezra Miller.
I still think the biggest mistake they made was not just taking the TV cast and just running with those guys.
Yeah. I don't know why. And you know, they're gonna appear in some movies, I'm sure, at some point. But these movies are good. Like the individual DC movies seem to be really good.
Yep.
The Suicide Squad movie is really good. The newest one, not the first one, was awful.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I could rant about
the
that
first
movie.
Suicide Squad movie is like, it's like Hot Topic threw up all over Guardians of the Galaxy or something. It's
awful. Oh no, not even Hot Topic. What's like trashier than Hot Topic?
I don't know.
It's like,
I haven't bought clothes in like 20 years.
Oh no, it's like a, like if Walmart tried to be edgy.
Yeah, probably.
It's like edgy Walmart threw up on
Guardians. What a shitty fucking movie.
It makes me mad because in that movie is a good movie.
And I'm glad they kept Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she's great.
Because she's great and she put a lot into that.
And that's, you know, that goes in that back character. To I have this thing for watching, like, you know, bad 80s movies.
Yeah.
There's one in particular about this.
I would say there are no bad 80s movies.
Well, this one is, it's low budget. It's like these alien cowboys come to Earth and this bikini babe has a gun and kills them. I'll remember later, but the title later. But the cast, like, was really trying. And everything around them was terrible, but the cast was doing their best. And me, a bad movie with a great cast, i.e. Margot Robbie, can represent themselves well. And she did that.
Yeah, that movie was a mess.
Yeah.
It was awful. I didn't spend any money on it. Someone I knew let me borrow the DVD and I watched it. And I'm this movie's a fucking turd.
It was probably Netflix or something.
I tell you, it's not a fucking turd, The Batman.
Yeah, that's great.
What a good fucking movie.
Two thumbs and something else up.
Wish I had four hands and give it four thumbs up.
Baby, so, makes me wish I had three hands.
before we wrap up here, I was thinking about, I wanted to get back into to doing some shout out for podcasters and stuff.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
I used to do this and then I kind of got off Twitter. But there's a YouTube channel called Force of Light Entertainment. It's run by two sisters, Michelle with two L's, Natalie the Red. And they do a really good job of discussion of movies, TV shows, stuff that's going on in the news, all kinds of things. They do weekly roundups of like entertainment news. They talk about movies. They talk about Star Wars stuff, all kinds of things.
Okay, cool.
So shout out to them. I found their YouTube or maybe Twitter. I can't remember when I was still on Twitter. And we interacted a little bit and then I got off Twitter. I still keep up with them on YouTube. It's good. They do a really good job and they have grown their channel. Really, it's really cool.
So, oh, I subscribe, so I'll be watching
their videos tomorrow. There we go. There we go. Yeah. So they did a thing on the Slap.
Oh, okay. Here, nice.
Recently.
Okay.
And weekly roundups and you know, so yeah. They do a really good job. So I just want to shout them out because I like people that do good stuff, especially the independent smaller podcasters and YouTube channels. So I'm going to get back into doing some shout outs.
That's great. Hey, I consume a variety of weird things on YouTube. So
yes, he does.
I've
seen it. Last Man Alive, burn the hard drives.
We don't quite have a pact for that yet, but we'll see.
The night is dark and full of incognito tabs.
No, we're not. We're definitely not there, but...
No!
But at least clear my YouTube search history, because both my children are on my YouTube account.
Oh, man.
For some... So, there is a weird combination of stuff that comes across.
Yeah, I feel that, yeah. Very occasionally, Arabella will... I'll let her watch my phone. And so, you know, I have, like, mostly, like, guitar shit on there, like, wrestling stuff, movie stuff. Then there's, like, Cocomelon pops up, like, suggested. Or Cookie Swirl C. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know Cookie Swirl. It's sad. Well, my I have a 12-year-old who is into memes.
Yeah.
And then I have a 9-year-old that's into Roblox. Cookie Swirl, she's into that as well. So it's like a weird combo of like memes and Roblox and Team Fortress stuff and then workout things and
I don't really let her watch YouTube very much at all. Yeah. Like it's kind of like a little treat or when she's really been being annoying, I'm like, hey, just watch.
But you
this.
Just need those one or two videos to really jack up your algorithm, right?
You do. It's like. Top 5 Dusty Rhodes promos. Cookie Swirl C, you know, she's making like homemade slime with a Barbie. And all of this kind of stuff. But well,
then Dusty's at the end of the video.
Hard times, baby.
Repetenda!
Repetenda! All right. Well, until next time, this has been Fat, Drunk, and Stupid. Thank you, Brad, for everything.
Hey, thanks for coming over, Robbie.
You're the man.
No, you're the man.
We'll do it again soon. Don't forget, look for Force of Light Entertainment on YouTube.
Yep.
Tell him Rob from Fat, Drunk, and Stupid sent you.
And tell him Brad said hi, too.
Tell him Brad said hi and Star Trek is lame.
What?
Goodbye.
See ya.